Demi Moore enlists, It's Time to Dance Dirty, and please, Mr. Bean Was My Father's Name. This week and more on 30 2010.
Every show sometimes associated videos. 30 2010, 30 2010. Surprises are awaiting as we're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s. On 30 2010.
Welcome everybody to another fun-filled episode of 30 2010, the internet's look back into the past 30, 20, and 10 years ago. That week. This week being August 18th through the 24th, we're going to be looking at that week in pop culture history, 1987, 97, and 2007. Does this make sense? Have I sold the premise to people yet?
Yeah,
sit down and open a window back to very specific weeks. See where you were. Maybe you were an embryo. You might enjoy 87 because it just so happens we will be talking about the worst movie ever made, almost like universally agreed upon. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Antista. Who else is here?
I'm Dave Big Daddy Rudden.
I'm Diana Goodman. No one puts me in the corner.
Ooh. And, I totally forgot about that aspect of later in the show. Stay tuned for that. And 07, a good 07 for once. But as always, we have to start in 1987. Like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
But
how was outside?
Ladies? It was fun. My lady friend won, and I was with her, and she won like a 3-day pass. Mm-hmm. Like seeing The Who. When am I ever going to get to do that again?
No, it's
really good.
Everybody's post from Outside Lands made it seem really cool.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, everything is crazy expensive. Like
is
eating
it?
Or drinking anything there.
The fucking frou-frou food truck.
Yeah.
That's the new festival shit. It's not funnel cakes and fries.
We literally bought a melted candle. Like, this is a thing.
A melted candle?
We ate a melted candle. It was really weird.
No, happens to all
melted
of us.
Candy bars. This is a thing they do now. Like,
what?
Melt a,
fuck
like,
that.
A
what
chocolate
the
candy bar and then put shit in it. Like, we'll melt this candy bar down. We'll put, like, crunchies and toffee and whatever you want in it, and then you eat it with a spoon, and I'm like, this is the worst-case scenario of a candy bar.
Yeah, this sounds like you didn't want to go shopping for actual ingredients.
We went to an
place. They use, like, a cool machine to do it, so it's kind of fun watching it.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. Let me bring you back. August 18th through the 24th. Starting up with a little bit of news. The Hungerford Massacre?
Yeah, so this was a good old-fashioned guy with a gun goes crazy spree killing in England that I almost, like, I think about it in almost weird way, like a Hot Fuzz, because this guy, he starts out just killing a couple people over here, a couple people over there, and then he just sort of saunters down to the main street of his small town and just starts killing people, set his house on fire, and he's just wandering around shooting people, and the cops are outgunned because it's England, and he ends up like barricading himself in a community college and finally takes his own life. No one's really sure why the hell he did it. They ended up banning some guns because of it.
This never would have happened if the Bobbies had muskets. It wouldn't happen. I guess we won't start the show like that.
Yeah, but 16 people died, so
Jesus.
That's
it's a pretty huge body count.
For the UK especially, but for anywhere.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a whole shire. Bad joke, I'm sorry.
Let's see if this news gets any more lighthearted. A 15-year-old boy on August 23rd hijacks a KLM flight from Amsterdam claiming to have a bomb?
Yeah.
And demands $1 million.
Yep.
What the heck? A little boy.
A 15-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess he's Italian. He had family in Amsterdam. They sent him, like, you got to go live with your grandparents. You're you know, out of control right now. And then he's, like, coming back to his parents. He's like, I don't want to go back to my parents. I have a bomb. Give me money.
And we had to take him seriously?
We had to take this poor kid. Wow. Poor dumb kid. I tried to find out what happened to him. All I could find was the plane landed. They talked him out. Nobody was hurt because, of course, he didn't have a bomb. And he got like 6 months.
Really?
Yeah, because he's a kid and he's being an idiot. But yeah, back in the day, we actually had planes and they would get hijacked. And sometimes people actually did have weapons and shit.
And they would be talked out of it.
Yeah.
And
he could get 6 months, which is like not even a school year.
6 months. Yeah. Wow. Jesus. There are way too many
movies
this
week. He's the most badass kid in his whole grade. Also, I don't think these things would be happening if we didn't have summer reruns.
Yeah.
Original programming, people would be at home watching TV.
Yeah, like, Steve Urkel was on right now. We could have prevented all of this. I'm sure that was big in Italy and Amsterdam. Yeah. But there's a lot of movies this week, none of which I've heard of, Dee.
Well,
so.
Yeah, we can run through a couple. Partition with Saeed Jaffrey, who's Indian or Pakistani. I'm trying to look this up. It turns out every 10 years, in a year that ends with a 7, there's a movie called Partition.
Jesus. About, very hard to search for.
About the splitting of India and Pakistan. Because back in the day, India and Pakistan and Bangladesh were all one giant British colony. And then in 1947, they split them. So that Pakistan was in two parts. Bangladesh and Pakistan were both Pakistan and India. And it was like all the Muslims start heading towards Pakistan. All the Hindus start heading towards India. And like a million people die.
Okay.
Yeah.
But all right.
There are a bunch of movies called Partition all about this.
I just wanted to talk about trading cards in this segment.
I want to pick a good one. And they all look the same. And it pisses me off.
What about Project A Part 2? That is a terrible title.
Yeah.
Well, a lesser Jackie Chan film, but a part two to the movie Project A, but it sounds more like a code name or a Honda model.
Yeah.
I'm not getting my jokes out today.
That sounds like what you name a YouTube video before you push it live.
Very specific joke that Dave and I cackle at. And also, Hamlet Goes Business, excuse me?
Yeah,
directed by Aki Kaurismäki.
Good job. Kaurismäki? Yeah, the Finnish director. He made a black comedy Hamlet.
Really?
He's one of those great European directors that I've not delved into.
But like,
I admit,
87, so it's like Gordon Gekko-y, like he goes business.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what they translated to in English, which is like, you could have done better.
There's a lot of English words.
I mean, it's
you
like so close to being Herbie Goes Bananas.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and
moving
on. I vaguely remember The Big Easy,
yeah,
but it could be confusing for The Big Chill. As a matter of fact, I am.
Oh,
The Big Easy.
This one is Dennis Quaid and Ellen Barkin doing detective crime stuff down in Nolens. And Dennis Quaid has like the dodgiest accent ever.
Does he?
I tried to find something from the trailer that make it fun, and I couldn't. It's just, it was pretty boring. So,
what's your history with New Orleans?
My brother lives
there. Oh, okay. I thought you're from Philly, not from New Orleans.
Yeah, but my brother lives there. Been there a bunch of times. Fucking love it. Everyone should go visit
at
least once.
Jeff? Here's a movie near and dear to my heart. Something
God
that I had to talk about.
I have something I need to talk about with this too, but it's not what you think it is.
Meet the Garbage Pail Kid. Starring Nat Nerf.
All right. No.
Oh
we can't
gosh.
Do this on the Garbage Pail Kids. This movie is wonderful, fascinating. I can think of no equivalent other than maybe the Emoji Movie. Like it's something this white hot of a trend that gets made into a film and nobody gives a shit or can figure out what it is. It's very notorious. I was super excited for it because I was huge into Garbage Pail Kids. Garbage Pail Kids, a line of Topps trading cards making fun of Cabbage Patch Kids. Mm-hmm. And I love saying this. Created by Pulitzer Prize winning Art Spiegelman, the man who wrote Mouse.
Wow!
Before he wrote Mouse,
holy cow.
Created the Garbage Pail Kids, and he's not proud of it. He you can buy a book of them, and he does the foreword.
I mean, the cards are great.
The cards
the
are
movie.
Awesome. The movie is
it's terrifying
just
terrifying looking.
I need a better thing for this because it feels like a funnier die sketch. Like, what's the dumbest way you can shoehorn this property into a film? Well, guess what? Garbage Pail Kids are real. They come from space. And they sing songs and try and help children out. Like, it's the most unfulfilling if you actually like the cards. Because they start out a little gross. Somebody farts. A alligator character eats children's toes. But then, like, they forget what the audience is, which is me. I want gross booger and poop jokes, which they're never going to be allowed to do
I
in a film.
The other thing about Garbage Pail Kids that kids like, besides the grossness, was that there were enough cards where there would probably be one for your name.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your name is bored
or
something. But it's like
there's a variant of every
Dave.
Time. Yeah.
I would guess there's Dirty Diana. Let's see. Cruddy Chris. Crummy Chris. I don't know.
So this is after a giant fart scene, slime, someone's popping zits. Yeah. And then it's just like, well, we're a kid's movie. I guess we have to sing a song about togetherness. And it's just, it's
Why should we do something nice? Let's quit now, that's my advice.
We can do anything by working with each other.
I ain't gonna work for free. Tell me what's in this for me.
This is so insipid.
Yeah, why would you? It's not a teacher, kids. And also these, yeah, I don't. This movie should not be in any form of HD. Mm-hmm. So seeing it in what it like 720 or 1080.
Well, Dave, I bought like, a badass Blu-ray from Shout Factory.
They don't blink, yeah. And remastered. I can see the seams where their neck.
terrifying mushy masks that they're wearing.
Yes, little people in masks. It was terrifying, but it looked incredible. When I love being. I was alive during this period, so like I love the Garbage Pail Kids. Little Chrissy's not reading the trades in 1987. He just goes to a movie theater, and all of a sudden, there's a trailer for his favorite thing is now going to have a movie made out of it. And that happened. And that happened with Ninja Turtles. And I remember we didn't know there was going to be a Ninja Turtles movie. Mm-hmm. So to describe it to friends, he's like, "It looks just like Garbage Pail Kids the movie. They're like real puppety things." We didn't know how to describe what this looked like, and I still kind of don't. But it's an embarrassing. It was a huge flop. But I think I'm going to propose it as a Monday night movie. I think it's excruciating, but it's available free everywhere all over the internet because no one really wants to lay any claim to it. But a really good Shout Factory remaster with a couple of bonus features that I picked up a while back.
Oh, my God. Okay, here's what infuriates me about this movie. Not just that it's a terrible idea, that the creatures are ugly, whatever. My problem is the lead, the kindly old man, is Anthony Newley.
Yep.
And Anthony Newley deserves everyone's respect for fuck's sake, because he was both a musical theater actor and also a songwriter. Some of his songs include Feeling Good, which is an amazing song. He wrote the lyrics to Goldfinger, and he also wrote all the songs from Willy Wonka.
What?
Yes.
Pure Imagination?
Pure Imagination, one of the most beautiful songs ever.
Yeah. I think just recently popped up in the new Thor movie.
Yeah, he does not deserve... This is his final film role, I believe.
Oh, that's awful.
He does a bunch of TV after this, but he does not deserve to be in the Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah, I think he in some promotional material, it's even credited like, and you should know who this guy is. He's really special. Of course I did not at the time, but thank you for that context, Steve. That's very depressing.
Cheer up, Charlie, and all the wonderful saw I've got a golden ticket. And he does not deserve this.
As bad or worse as Orson Welles' last movie being Transformers the movie. What a wonderful time.
I think this is worse because he's on camera.
Well, that's...
And the kid that's supposed to be, I guess...
Our hero.
Our hero and the person that we identify with, Sean Astin?
Mm-hmm.
Mackenzie Astin.
It's Sean Astin's brother. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel like they went to Sean Astin's parents and lowballed them, and they're like, "Well, we can't give you Sean for that, but Mackenzie,
we give you two Mackenzies."
Yeah, he was on Facts of Life.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Yeah. I do not know this, but again, I've said these stories 1,000 times. I didn't have what I felt. I didn't have taste. I was too young. I'm like 6 or 7 years old, but I remember we rented this. And we're outrageously dissatisfied and bored. Like, and how does that happen? Even a bad Garbage Pail Kids movie should entertain a 6 or 7 year old into Garbage Pail Kids, i.e., Transformers the movie. But this did not. And I remember we kind of took it out towards the end and threw on the second tape, which was Adventures in Babysitting. The reason I saw Adventures in Babysitting was because we couldn't finish Garbage Pail Kids as fucking 6 year olds. It was that bad. But moving into the next film. Oh, this is lovely.
Another classic comedy.
I was born in East LA, man. I was born in East LA.
Oh, yeah, you're born in East LA. Well, let's see your green card, huh?
Green card? I'm from East LA.
All right, well, then who?
Cheech Marin.
A novelty song made film.
Wow. Really?
Born in East LA.
I forget where this, because I'm a light Cheech and Chong fan, even though it's all terrible. But this is his first breakaway from Cheech, I think?
No, he is Cheech. Sorry, from Chong. Yeah.
From Chong. But it's like, he wrote the film, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, and stars it with Daniel Stern. There's Paul Rodriguez in it.
Yep.
And the dumb thing, I'm ashamed to admit, because it'll make me sound like a bad person, one of my best friends... Let's call him Mr. Melendez. Mm-hmm. We got together for his birthday, and this is before Photoshop, put his face into this poster and gave it to him and printed it out for him.
Is he actually born in East LA?
No.
Or anywhere in...
No, it was just like the funniest Mexican thing we'd ever seen. He's literally carrying a bag of oranges, like going to the border. But you told you make me look like a bad person.
A Million to Juan.
That actually might have been what we did. That's the one with Paul Rodriguez. I've never seen this, I don't think.
I watched some clips of it.
Oh, no, he's literally jumping the border in this.
Yeah, no, the idea is he gets rounded up by the INS, even though he's legal. They're just a bunch of racist
that
rednecks.
Couldn't
And then, yeah, ends up in Tijuana, and wackiness ensues with him trying to break back into the U.S.
No, this was the poster, and look, can't see it. Google it for yourselves. This could be, like, Trump 2020 campaign propaganda. With the right words put on it.
Oh, my God, it can. Yeah. Yes.
It's all about the border wall. Jesus Christ. but that's Born in East L.A. Sorry to not do it justice. Maybe we'll get to a Cheech and Chong movie. This is the big movie of this week. You don't get much bigger than this.
She thought it would be just another summer vacation.
Who's that?
Oh, them. They're the dance people.
But it turns out to be the time of her life.
Let's be now!
I can't. Yeah.
Yep. Dirty Dancing.
This was, I remember my first day at a new elementary school, they went around in a circle and everybody said their favorite movie and everybody said Dirty Dancing. And I'd never seen it. And I'm like, I took the dirty very literal. And I thought everybody's allowed to see scandalous movies but me.
Well, here's a problem. I mean, I have a couple problems with this movie because this was, if you're a girl my age, this was your favorite movie at some point. I watched this a million times. So I went back and revisited it with grown-ass eyes. Uh-oh. And it's still really good.
Oh, good. That's the outfit.
It does have a couple problems. I don't like that there's 80s music in it. I wish it was a straight period piece. And that title is fucking terrible.
It's really bad.
What were they thinking with that title?
It's really bad.
Ew.
I remember they thought it strong enough. I went to go see Wait, Wait, and He'll Tell Me Live. The host of that show, Peter Sagal, wrote a movie about Havana, Cuba.
Yeah. Right.
That got optioned, and they couldn't figure out what to do with it. So they decided to make it a Dirty Dancing sequel.
Yep.
So the only movie the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has ever written is Dirty Dancing Havana Nights.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a nice little anecdote. I feel like I've seen this movie. But I felt the same way about Top Gun until I actually saw it.
Yeah.
Because you see bits and pieces of it on television.
Right. I've seen like the first 20 minutes and like the last 10. Mm-hmm. But like everything that happens in the middle, something with a watermelon, I think someone has an abortion. I can't really remember.
Everyone forgets about the illegal abortion subplot.
Yes. We've been doing this for over 18 months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In 1986 to 87. Is this our first Patrick Swayze movie?
He was in Youngbloods.
Okay.
The hockey movie we had, but he was way down on the cast list. This is his first big starring role, big breakout role. Well, at Red Dawn.
I don't want to forget about Patrick Swayze. I like that man a great deal.
I guess that puts us at three Jennifer Grey movies. Ferris Bueller,
And
Red Dawn. Wasn't she also one of the girls? Because they were, I think the story was they didn't like each other on the set of Red Dawn, Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey.
Really?
And then they got back together on this and they kind of like, all right, let's work together. And then they realized like, oh yeah, we're actually pretty cool with each other.
Yeah, they have pretty good chemistry. I mean, it's so weird that like this is the movie that hit so big with so many people.
Yeah.
This was massive that... It's a period piece about the early 60s about it's never said, but it's a Jewish family going off to like a Grossinger's type resort in, the Catskills, of like a summer resort that you would go to because the other places are restricted. They don't let in Jews because the past was great, everybody. Anyway, I'm trying to think of other movies that are like it, but I mean, it's a female coming of age story that's also a love story, that's also a musical, that's also a period piece. Yeah, it's a strange mix of everything that it was massive.
Yeah.
Especially the soundtrack.
I mean, I was on pins and needles waiting for you to say it didn't hold up because like this has been a remarkably resilient film.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I was really, really expecting to be like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. I can't believe I like this. It's
here's where Anthony Michael Hall does blackface.
Yeah.
No, it didn't happen.
Holy crap. This is like, I can't. There aren't a lot of movies like this. Yeah. And I kind of wish there were more.
The movie from the 80s set in the 50s, I just imagine like clutching my pearls, like what's going to be awful about
it
this?
It seems
but it's about how, a lot of it is about sort of the rigid conformity and breaking away from the rigid conformity by sexy dancing and then falling in love with the dance instructor and having a sexual awakening.
Yeah.
and also helping a girl this get a legal like, abortion.
It seems like a marriage of like my sister's two favorite movies into a third favorite movie, which is Grease.
Yeah.
And then something like 16 Candles, maybe.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, like the music element, the coming of age element, and the 1950s element. It all kind of works
together. I gotta say that the period we've covered so far in 302010 has a lot of good movies for young girls, and I don't...
Yeah.
I don't know. Does that still happen? We consider Hunger Games that? I thought that was just a youth phenomenon.
Yeah. I mean, there aren't a lot of movies with female leads, period.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of times it's kind of interchangeable. Like, they don't have to be female. Mm-hmm. Like, Hunger Games would be very similar if it were a dude.
Okay. Yeah, but you can't do that.
And that's a...
you can't do that with Some Kind of Wonderful unless you're John Hughes and you've done it several times.
And that's a good thing. I mean, really, no, I think that's actually progress where it's like being a man or a woman isn't integral to a character. Then you might as well make it a woman. Who the fuck cares?
Well, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Remember being a teenager and, you know, you finally going over to women's houses and they're all obsessed with the John Hughes films, but I can't think of a 90s equivalent to those films. That was like all teen girls had to latch on to for like a decade.
Like, I feel
She's
like
all
we,
that.
We,
that no, you're right. Yeah. That's but that came a little later.
Yeah.
That was a wave that hit, but after I think a long drought. I'm full of shit. I'll stop talking.
Feel like we don't make women's pictures anymore. You know, the only thing, we have chick flicks, which are like just all romantic comedies, and they're usually like really gross with the gender norms, and I don't like them. and this is one where it's like, these are pretty fleshed out characters. Mm-hmm. She's more fleshed out than he is, that's for dang sure. She's the lead, and it's about, you know, it's her story. And like I said, the coming of age and the changing awakening of blossoming into a woman and wanting to fuck Patrick Swayze. Because
which we've all been there.
All have been there.
Come on, I've seen Point Break 1,000 times.
Come on.
I'm dreaming about it right now.
Yeah, it's just, I'm shocked that it held up. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. And well, moving into TV of 1987, on August 18th, Rod Roddy. Man,
yes.
He's working in the wrong industry because he's been named the permanent announcer on Price is Right. Come on down!
Yeah, I mean, he's notable for being on a couple other shows. I think he was also Family Feud's announcer, but where everyone really knows Rod Roddy from is The Price is Right. And I couldn't tell you who was who had his job before and who has it now, but Rod Roddy is always the one that I like associate with that call. Come on down!
Yeah, and the camera starts going crazy looking for the guy in the audience. Yeah,
and it's like, I regret that I never was on The Price is Right during the period where Rod Roddy would have said, Dave Rudden, come on down. In the same way that I, you know, as a kid had the pipe dream that, maybe one day I will be a cast member on Saturday Night Live and Don Pardo will say my name.
David Rudden!
Yeah, but now I'll have to settle for Daryl Hammond and whoever is Price is Right.
There's a lot of reasons that's over.
Yeah. Ah.
And as we always joke about, 1987 TV is a bit of a drought. Networks don't want to launch things when everybody
This isn't even this is an announcement, not even a thing that aired.
Yeah, everybody's off in the Catskills. Dating against class.
Yeah. Or playing Week's big video game release.
So yeah, the big week we do have a release date for something this big. I'm guessing August 22nd, 1987.
The Legend of Zelda on the NES.
Whoa!
So I think
in the U.S.
Yeah. We covered a bunch of this when it was released in Japan.
Yeah.
When Brett was here, and who's a giant Zelda fan, has multiple Zelda tattoos. He can talk about it more eloquently. So I encourage you to find that episode because we talk more in depth.
We hate Zelda
about that as a game. But it was momentous for a lot of reasons. The gold cartridge, it had a battery that you could save on, which is something the NES didn't do a lot because it's a big game and you can get lost in it, and I did. And
this is the first game I think I ever really loved, like Super Mario Brothers
baffled me,
but Legend of Zelda, that gold cart is just like, it draws you to it. And there's just this big world to explore and all these dungeons to go in, and each one has a different boss. And
I wandered around for hours, but I didn't get it.
Oh, I mean, well, I had like the NES Player's Guide, which like they tell you how to do the first four worlds, and then you would just kind of like talk on the schoolyard, like, how do you beat the fifth one? What does this guy mean when he says the dongo just like smoke? Oh, okay. Grumble, grumble. Okay, that's it. All right, I get all this. And you start to put it together, and then I got to a point where in like fifth, sixth grade, I would come home and like I was a latchkey kid, so I would start the game when I got home from school, and I would be done by the time dinner was ready, which was like 7 or 8 o'clock. So like I could reliably beat this game in 2.5 hours or so. Not speed running.
Really?
Of course, like speedrunners are way better at it, but it's just like I knew where everything was, I knew where to go and when and all that, and it was just like it was a cathartic thing to just play through this game.
I haven't touched it in about 10 years, but I overlooked it. I was confused, didn't pop it in, and then it's credibility slowly came out, and around Link to the Past I popped it back in. It clicked.
Yeah.
No guide. Finished it over the course of a couple of days because I'm like literally wandering trying to figure this thing out. And here we are in 2017. Zelda's the best game out, and I'm a huge fan.
Yep.
But I was sort of in denial. And I'm going to blame part of that, since we talked about this previously, with the American marketing.
Yeah.
It's admittedly a tough game to sell because it's not like most other games people have played.
Yeah.
It's not an arcade game. It's not a single screen. It's not a side scroller. There's progress and things to update. It's technically an 87 complicated.
Yeah.
It's also complicated to market games after the game crash. So Nintendo is willing to try anything.
The ads are so weird.
And I know this is hack, but we got to do it. Diana, if you've never seen it, here's the first ever U.S. Legend of Zelda commercial.
Oh, boy.
Did you see the latest Nintendo newsletter?
Whoa, nice graphics. I'd like to get my hands on that game.
You mean you haven't played it yet?
The fuck that
we
game.
Can play it on my Nintendo Entertainment System. It's the Legend of Zelda, and it's really rad. Those creatures from Ganon are pretty bad. Octoroks, Tektites, Leavers, too. But with your help, our hero pulls through. Yeah, go, Link. Yeah, get Zelda.
All right.
Wait,
wow.
So the nerdy kid appears to be part of the Apollo space program.
Yeah.
He's got a crew cut and horn-rim glasses.
He's dressed like a villain in Back to the Future.
Why is he friends with that jock guy?
Well, you gotta hit those demos, yeah. White and more white.
Yeah, and the other commercials.
The other commercial is even weirder, because I get it. It's hard to sell, but it's like just a dude in a padded cell screaming about things he might have encountered.
Zelda, become a legend on your Nintendo Entertainment System.
Zelda!
Which way you go?
Good times.
It's so bizarre because it did happen. It was pretty common in the marketing.
It's like,
but
if Philip Glass made a one-man show for Zelda.
But the game footage is almost subliminal.
Yeah.
It's on for it's less than 30% of each commercial, and it flashes so fast you can't see what's happening. And I think at the time Zelda didn't look impressive in screenshots or video because you didn't really know what it was about. But Jesus Christ, it's been 30 years. 30 years for Zelda, and it's back on top again, and it's, man, Jesus.
I mean, it was literally part of the NES collection last year,
yep.
So it's like, they're still being celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, yeah, there's Breath of the Wild, which is, I think, the closest tie to the original Legend of Zelda in terms of, like, timeline and story. And
don't worry about it. Explore at your own pace. Yeah. You might uncover something that'll lead you to a critical path, but just relax.
Yep.
And play Zelda.
And just keep playing as the little guy in the little green outfit named Zelda.
Diana, I'm going to have to ask you to leave for this break because I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Still number one by U2, but we have new releases, including the Dirty Dancing soundtrack.
The massive.
Lonesome Jubilee by John Cougar Mellencamp and Out of the Blue by Debbie Gibson.
Yeah, so what to take us out? I thought, well, anything off of the Dirty Dancing soundtrack, I was shocked to realize how many of those songs I know the words to. Still, God, but I mean, Debbie Gibson, she wrote her own songs. That makes her better than Tiffany. And this is her second album.
Still
and this,
having that argument?
This song was really popular, and it's very, very 80s. So I thought, let's go with that.
All right, now go stand in the corner for your Zelda
only
comment.
In my dreams. Okay.
And we'll be right back with August 18th to the 24th in 1997. Where were you?
Ahoy ho, everybody, this is Bob Mackey,
Chris Antista,
Henry Gilbert,
and when you're done listening to this, we'd like you to check out Talking Simpsons. It's our chronological exploration of The Simpsons, only on the Laser Time Podcast Network,
where we'll discuss why Barney is the MVP of Season 3.
Whatever you say, Mom!
When we try to figure out what every reference means.
Weren't you one of the little rascals?
And where we'll tell you how to avoid the poison donut.
There is a poisoned one, isn't there, Smithers?
No, sir. I discussed this with our lawyers. They consider it murder.
Damn their oily hides!
For all this and more, listen to Talking Simpsons every Wednesday at TalkingSimpsons.com or wherever you find your podcasts.
coming in with Oasis off the album Be Here Now. Yep. You know what I mean. This is my least favorite Oasis single of all time.
I'm not a fan.
I am a fan of Oasis. I like Oasis quite a bit.
I like Oasis fine.
Your husband karaoke an Oasis song every time we go.
I know, and it always kills. But yeah, not this one.
Not this one. But we can't change what happens. These are dates, people, not a definitive list of what's best. Because there are other new releases this week that you might not care about. In Deep by Tina Arena. Fleetwood Mac's The Dance live album.
Yeah, that's a great, great album, man. They've got Tusk with the entire USC marching band.
Okay.
It was like a film special, and then they released the soundtrack from it.
So were they reunited or something like that?
Yeah, they reunited after many, many years of separate problems and cheating on each other and whatever. Actually, speaking of karaoke, mm-hmm. and speaking of Tusk, mm-hmm. last time we were at a karaoke place, I was looking through Fleetwood Mac to find something to sing, and I sang The Chain not very well because it's all harmonized, but they have Tusk on there. Do you want to hear the lyrics to the song Tusk?
Sure.
Tusk! It's an instrumental where they occasionally yell, Tusk!
See, I'm done making those karaoke faux pas. Nobody wants to do Helter Skelter with you, Chris. I learned this
the
hard
way. Oh, I could do Helter Skelter.
It hurts so much.
I know, you got screaming.
Hurts so much. And also this week...
I have blisters on my fingers!
Daisy by Dog's Eye View, and this will probably come up later, Midnight Love by Shaggy.
I wasn't me on this one?
No,
or is this one You're My Angel?
But it doesn't matter, because I'll Be Missing You. It's still number one.
Still. When will its reign of terror end?
You can't take it down. But of course, we're going to get into the movies of 1997, released August 18th through the 24th. Jesus, some of this is bad. I just want to talk about this briefly. Leave It to Beaver. I have no nostalgia for this. It was...
Is it a Brady Bunch kind of movie?
No, not
it's just
really.
A kid named Beaver in like a 1950s home, and like it was kind of in syndication. I remember I wrote a story about me and my Boglin going on adventure so I could watch the new Leave It to Beaver show, because that was the first show I could remember premiering the syndicated new version of the show. But I don't remember anything about it. Man. It became shorthand for like domestic children situations.
It's just so fucking square. That's the point. It
and
is the squarest
is
thing.
It doesn't have the hard edge of Dennis the Menace.
And they were remaking a bunch of old sitcoms into movies, and of course Leave It to Beaver got the treatment. By then, I think that wave was way over.
Yeah. I think we may have had Casper on the horizon, or maybe even Cuthbert come out.
Casper's like 95.
Oh, okay.
I know a lot of younger people love this film. It's pretty good. Masterminds, starring Patrick Stewart as a bad guy. I love movies where Patrick Stewart's the bad guy.
I do love movies where Patrick Stewart's the bad guy. We just said conspiracy theories, what, 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And man, Vincent Kartheiser. I want to see what Pete from Mad Men looks like in 1997.
Yeah, he was a child actor. Wow. I totally didn't realize that. And I look up pictures. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy.
Now, is this the major Hollywood debut of a man named Guillermo del Toro?
Sí. Es la verdad.
Let's hear that.
It's Mimi.
Indian scientists found a way to stop a deadly disease. Now, the cure they created has taken on a life of its own.
So you think your little Frankenstein's got the better of you?
Ooh, the mimic. The mimic. I totally forget Del Toro was involved with that. But this is like after his Kronos and his indie sensations.
Yeah, this is like his Hollywood breakthrough. And I don't think they realized when you hire Del Toro, you're going to get dark and weird.
Yeah, you're going to have a shitload of
No matter what, you're going to get dark and weird.
But it's Mira Sorvino, like fresh off her Oscar,
top
in the film. And I know it has at least one straight-to-video sequel, so somebody out there likes it. I have not seen it.
It's been a million years since I've seen it. It is creepy because it's basically about giant cockroaches that look like people, kind of. Like
the Applegates?
Yes, actually. Like, no, I mean, the idea is that they...
So glad you're here to get that.
That they, you know, they like, put a super virus in this to stop... into cockroaches to spread this cure for another virus. Mm-hmm. And now the cockroaches have evolved so that they look kind of like humans, like, from far away. There's lots of shots of them in, like, subway stations where, like, at the end of the platform, it looks like maybe it's a dude wearing a trench coat, kind of. And then you get closer and, oh, shit, it's a giant cockroach. Yeah, it's weird and creepy.
Well, I gotta get through all of Del Toro's movies, and I can't believe how behind I am, especially with this new stuff, because I love that man. For some reason, little Chris was here day one to see this film.
Oh no,
Chris Tucker.
How rich are you, man? Loan me that. You gonna loan it to me?
Charlie Sheen. Money talks.
How about some nice Dom Perignon 85?
How about some coke?
45.
Speaking of Sorvino's.
Woo! It's Paul Sorvino. Jesus Christ. This is, and here we have the first and last non-Rush Hour movie Chris Tucker would make throughout a 15-year period.
Jesus.
Money Talks, I think, I want to say, is the breakthrough directorial effort of Brett Ratner.
It is. God damn it.
And this was huge. It was number, I think, it got to number two because of this film, which had a lot more weight behind it. But everyone I know is seeing Money Talks. And
right.
It's a good, I don't know, you heard what I said the previous week. I wanted to hate Chris Tucker because I assumed I'd see this act forever, and he only whipped it out like every 5 years, so I didn't get tired of him.
Well, at this point, we had just a few months ago had Fifth Element, where he is at his like wacky.
Oh yeah,
that is
so
what...
like going from that, and then he's still pretty wacky in this. I can imagine you're like, oh, this Chris Tucker guy is just like he's yelling all the time.
Yeah, but he's messing with the square. Yes. So I guess that's something.
And it is like it's telling that Brett Ratner made this movie and thought like one of these guys will be very central to my career, and the other guy not so much.
And
probably not the one that's not showing up, getting high and loaded all the time.
Topping the box office this week.
I'm really shocked this was number one.
I never expected you to do so damn well.
Gee, hi, James. Why don't they just get it over with? Call her Joan of Arc.
Oh! What a good reference. But
we miss you, Anne Bancroft.
I remember this. Demi Moore was a really, really big star in the early 90s and wasn't doing so hot. And this I feel like this movie was in production for like two goddamn years. Like, this is the one that's going to get her an Oscar.
Well, was this right before or after Striptease?
This is before Striptease, I believe.
No, we did Striptease.
Oh, we did Striptease.
Didn't we?
Yes.
So we
totally did.
We're after Striptease.
Yeah,
these are her big payday movies.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
And
it sort of worked out.
Yeah.
Well,
Ridley Scott bringing
directed by Ridley. This was back when Ridley Scott was out in the wilderness. Where
that
he was just.
Baldness.
Yep. He's just making whatever. I mean, and there's some good movies in there, like Black Rain's pretty watchable, and Thelma and Louise is fucking awesome. But Ridley, the 90s were weird for him. Weird time. He came back, Gladiator at the end of the decade. But so it's about the first woman who wants to become a Navy SEAL. And Demi Moore, all the training. And she got into amazing shape. And there's a scene where she shaves her head. And they made that like a big deal. Like, holy shit, she's shaving her head. And
she shaved her head for the role?
It's like, well, that makes sense.
She shaved her head for only $20 million?
that makes sense. And no,
must love her craft.
Is it a good movie? No, not really. It's actually a pretty bad movie. And I remember the reviews at the time all saying, this movie is like not very good, but the guy playing the drill sergeant, this Viggo Mortensen fella, he's fantastic in a movie that doesn't deserve it.
Oh, let's hope he doesn't abandon the profession. Turn out to be a weirdo. I remember in the reviews, like these fucking hoity-toity critics couldn't stop bringing up Private Benjamin. Like,
right.
We get it. This premise was explored 20 fucking years ago. It doesn't mean you can't do it
in
again.
A comedy.
And if you mentioned a similar movie that came out and I mentioned Private Benjamin, you have my permission to slap me across the face. Because all you're doing is say, I remember
Unless
something.
Unless Goldie Hawn is again playing someone in the military, then that's the only reason you can bring that movie up.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, no, we've had women in the military for a long time. Have we had? I mean, and they've slowly taken into more active roles, combat or pilots or whatever, and the idea we don't have any female
special
forces.
Nope, cutting
into
the Viagra budget. I'm gonna ban them. Ban them from the military.
Yep.
anyway,
should ban Klinger from the military because that's an equivalency. Anyway, not great.
It captured the attention of us in 1997, as did television, but maybe not this week.
No, not a very big week. In fact, the only major thing that that I found was that MSNBC aired the final edition of The Site, which was a hour-long show that kind of explored different elements of the internet, which is pretty, unknown at the time.
Yeah,
so you'd get people who were running websites or like, making this technology on the internet.
That's all that news channels are now, is who's tweeting what.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But this was kind of, if you didn't know what the internet was, like, you watch the show, you get to know, like, this Amazon site is doing... And it's funny to watch old clips of it. It was hosted by Soledad O'Brien, who has just done a lot of regular news shows. Mm-hmm. But she would, you would see these old websites just like, can you believe the future? And it's like, this is just text on a page.
Yeah.
And but the notable thing is that she had a co-host who was a CGI character named Dev Null.
No.
If you watch old clips, watch this guy, because it is like, the fucking worst, like, D-grade, DreamWorks sort of animation, but in 1997, so it's real bad.
And I just want to say real quick, because I love that you put the history in
here. Yeah, it's notable because what came of it, which is that, a lot of the tech that was used for it, a lot of the talent involved moved on to ZDTV.
Is that Ziff Davis?
Ziff Davis TV.
Yet another failed media venture?
Which led into another failed
venture.
There's some
bitterness
there,
people. Didn't you still work for Ziff Davis?
Probably
Game Pro.
Actually, no. When I worked at CNET, they were owned by Ziff Davis because they also had CNET and ZDNet. But yeah, so ZDTV then became Tech TV, which then became G4 TV.
It was G4 Tech TV merged and became G4 Tech TV briefly, and then just G4, and then that was. Man, I don't know. It makes me so mad. Because G4 had a lot wrong with it, but had a lot right with it, too. Yeah. The idea that tech and video games deserved a channel.
Yeah.
And they merged them together, and G4 eventually came out to, it's Cops reruns, Cheaters, reruns of Ninja Warrior, and Attack of the Show. It's the only original
content
they have.
1 30-minute show about video games per day.
And they were like, we're just going to swap it out for the Esquire Network. Because we think that's... And then they had the decision. They fired everyone at G4. Yeah. They're going to replace it with the Esquire Network. They then decided to not do that, to use one of their even shittier channels and turn that into the Esquire Network. What happens to G4? Was it like two or three years? They ran old G4 content. It's like 2014. We're here at E3 2010, about to get our hands on the Wii. And this is great, actually. I love looking at tech from 10 years ago and semi-HD. But you wonder why certain groups of people abandoned television. You fucking abandoned them.
Yeah.
You condensed everything they liked into one channel and then got rid of it.
Yeah. And this is actually this is marking the end of MSNBC kind of having specialty shows, because
it'd just be prison live footage.
A certain news event happens next week that kind of puts MSNBC into that same CNN 24-hour news cycle. Something happens next week, and
don't look it up.
You'll ever remember.
Find it out here.
You'll remember. Unless you're less than 15.
George Wallace, a TNT movie with Gary Sinise. I guess about the comedian.
Yeah.
He's probably pretty good. Played himself.
I feel like Gary Sinise made at least a dozen historical figure movies for TNT, because I believe he did a Truman one also.
That's
HBO.
For HBO. I'm positive.
Yeah.
Because I watched that a ton, because if you stole HBO and there was only one of them, you got to watch Truman a lot.
Yep. So, George Wallace, an interesting guy, because he's a racist fuck who ran for president and was terrible and segregationist. And then suddenly, had a change of heart towards the end.
I don't know about this. His shittiness overshadows that.
Yeah, after he almost was assassinated, he got shot, which is what Travis Bickle and Taxi Driver is totally based on, the guy that shot him. Mm-hmm. And then, sort of got better about being a dick, but not really.
Yeah,
so
George Wallace is the supervillain in Selma.
Yeah.
To put it in a modern context.
Yeah.
You blew my mind with Gary Sinise. He is so old-timey. I can think of Ransom, and everything else is he's in the past. Apollo 13, Green Mile, every single time.
Forrest Gump,
you're right. He's always in the past. He's a sturdy-looking American. That's what he is. No games this week. No notable games this week in 1997. Man, see? We're breezing through this.
We're still all addicted to Tetrisphere.
Tetrisphere is rocking the nation. But we can go out with Barry White, You're My First, My Last, My Everything from the Money Talks trailer. Because when we get back, we'll be in 2007, and we'll get to talk about a major game that makes up for the lack of releases in 1997. So stay tuned for the future, children.
Mr. Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea. It's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth watching. And August 18th to 24th, we got some stuff we can talk about. 75 years ago this week, August 20th, 1942, we had the release of Talk of the Town by George Stevens, which is, it's a George Stevens comedy. He'd gone off to war at this point as director and came back a very changed man, never made comedies again. But this one's got Cary Grant and Gene Arthur. It's pretty cute, you know, for a very classic, effervescent Hollywood type thing. Yeah, they needed some lightning because the Battle of Stalingrad had started that week, 75 years ago. So, yeah, bad news all around. Better news, though, also out that week, Bambi. Traumatized children everywhere, but it's charming. I mean, it's Bambi. It's beautiful. Thumper and Flower are my favorite. Then 50 years ago this week, in 1967, we have a light recommend for fans of trashier cinema, Roger Corman's The Trip, starring Peter Fonda. A drug movie. It's kind of in line with his other biker movies that he was making at the time, Corman especially, but Peter Fonda was in a bunch of them, trying to reach out to the kids these days and, you know, LSD parties, man, and not just like Reefer Madness scare tactics, but like really trying to talk to the kids. Those are all a lot of fun. I love hippie exploitation and biker exploitation. There's so much fun. But unfortunately, 40 years ago this week, August 19th, 1977, we lost Groucho Marx. He was 86. He was an incredible genius, honestly. Maybe one of the funniest people that ever lived. So if you've never seen a Marx Brothers movie, I'm going to recommend a couple. Night at the Opera is good, except for the romantic subplot. If you want to fast forward, I don't blame you. Duck Soup is a masterpiece with a lot of political commentary that still works. It's all of it's very wacky, goofy, horse feathers I recommend too. But also, just for Groucho, on YouTube, there is a ton of You Bet Your Life. His pseudo game show that he had, I believe in radio and then going into TV in the 50s. And it's just funny as hell. I mean, it's supposed to be a game show and it's mostly just him riffing at people's expenses. It's really funny, and there's so much of it on YouTube. There's an episode with him and Jack Benny. There's an episode where Harpo comes on. Of course, Harpo does not speak. It's really, really good. So, I mean, just entertain yourself for 5-10 minutes watching Groucho go crazy on people, and he's just so witty and so freaking fun. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Coming in with MIA Boys from Kayla? Kayla? Is that out this week?
Yep, out this week.
Out this week. Beautiful Girls by Sean Kingston, yeah. Still number one.
Well, what up? Kind of MISS MIA. Is she still
alive? Is she gone?
No.
I haven't heard anything.
She have
horrible.
A baby? Take some time off? We also have new releases from Rilo Kiley, their last album, Under the Black Light.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good album.
Challengers by New Pornographers, Eardrum by Talib Kweli. One Man Band, the studio debut of Swizz Beatz, and Conviction by Aiden.
Man, I'm kind of surprised. When it came out, I thought that, Under the Black Light was going to be their last album for a while. Because Jenny Lewis, first of all, Rilo Kiley had no business being as good as they were. I love their previous albums. But yeah, Jenny Lewis, who was a child actress, and I think, I forget.
He touched my breasts!
Yes, Wizards fans. The Wizards, and also Private Benjamin.
Hey!
I swear we didn't plan that. But also, I'm forgetting the name, but the guy who was in the second season of Salute Your Shorts, and he was one of the bullies on Boy Meets World, was like her ex-boyfriend. They dated while they were in Rilo Kiley together, and then she did some Stolo stuff.
Pinsky.
And yes, and then Under the Black Light, it's a lot like she did like country music in between Rilo Kiley albums, and this is very country influenced. There's a lot of like country instruments, but also kind of with mixed with funk, but different than their previous
like
stuff.
And
and
jugs.
It still makes for a really good album, but it is so tonally different than their previous two albums.
It's guaranteed to piss off their fans.
Yeah, I came around to it, but it is like their first two albums are very indie rock, and then this is kind of very tonally different, but it's also still really good. And Jenny Lewis is an amazing singer, and like still comes through on this album.
Oh my god!
But I miss Rilo Kiley because it was like that. That's a band that I very much think of when I was moving out here, because I was like listening to their previous albums just like, you know, traveling over here, and you know, like on my Xbox 360 as custom soundtracks. Mm-hmm. Just like, okay, this is a song that's just like, this is a sound that's like intensely familiar with me moving out here. I think I saw them two or three times when they came out here a couple times. Nice. And Jenny Lewis did solo stuff out here. And yeah, then
all you gotta wait for is the 18-year-olds who bought this album to turn 35, yeah, and they'll go back on a reunion tour once they can afford to see them. Mm-hmm. $150 a pop.
But yeah, really good. I prefer their previous two albums, but this is also really good.
You know, it's weird. I've only heard like a little bit of them, and I know a lot of people, you know, people whose opinions I trust, you know, really, really like them. My big problem with them is that after Force Awakens came out, I kept calling Kylo Ren Rilo Riley.
Oh my god, yeah.
And it was driving me nuts.
They've been subject to bad SEO for a while.
You're going to put the death of Han Solo on Jenny Lewis.
And, yep.
Yes.
Come on. Diana, the movies of 2007.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you choose the order through which we discuss these, because my word.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, I mean, Superbad's number one at the box office.
Superbad, number one, deservedly so.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird week. Well, let's just go in order. What the hell? Okay. Did you actually find a clip from this first movie that we're going to talk about?
I did, but it's
goddamn visual.
You're right, but I wanted to see if anybody can get it. Let's punish the listeners here.
Okay.
In his first film, he took America by surprise.
Oh, jeez! Oh, God! Oh, God!
But in his new film,
the winner of this magnificent holiday is 919.
Yes!
France will finally get what they deserve.
France deserved Rowan Atkinson?
They love him here.
We all deserve Rowan Atkinson. He's wonderful.
But I discovered Mr. Bean, I think, like, hammered, slept over to friend's house, son woke me up, he had HBO, and that's the only way you could see Mr. Bean in America for a while.
Was
HBO.
I saw him on PMS. Or PBS.
Yes,
PMS.
Yeah,
he was on PBS.
I'd never seen it before.
Yeah.
I'd never seen it before. I thought it was brilliant when I first traveled abroad at 18 years old to Costa Rica. Yeah, they had a lot of import stuff. There's Simpsons translated. The thing we enjoyed the most, more so than Saved by the Bell, Dave, which the college years played like every goddamn day.
Yeah.
In Spanish, Mr. Bean, because he doesn't talk.
It's like, universal.
Yeah, we're don't have to nudging each other and laugh at the same stuff. It was beautiful to see, and I love how easy it is to localize Mr. Bean, except if you make these movies.
No matter where you're from, him popping a barf bag on an airplane is hilarious. Or sticking his head inside of a turkey.
Or almost blowing a guy in church. Shit is funny. Trying to change in front of somebody.
I'll say... What is it? I think it was just called Bean the Movie or something.
Yeah.
It does fall subject to the same thing that like a lot of TV shows turn movies did, where it's like, let's use some of our best gags again.
Right.
I still find Bean the Movie hilarious.
It's funny.
It's like, I'll watch him do this again.
This is a little better. I just think it's bizarre. Rowan Atkinson he's going to make a third Johnny English movie. He seems to be gravitating more towards that character. Technically... Mm-hmm. This movie, Mr. Bean's Holiday, and I hope we still have our international audience listening. It's the last thing Mr. Bean was in.
Wow.
Outside of charity stuff. He did occasional shorts for charity. Comic Relief is big in the UK. Mm-hmm. But I did find something that I thought was a little funny and wanted to rub some schadenfreude in Rowan Atkinson's face. The Bean's technical last appearance ever is in this year in the movie... Top Funny Comedian, the movie. A fictionalized movie based on a Chinese game show. According to legend, Rowan Atkinson went through a messy divorce. And as a result, he now is a character in this movie based on a game show.
Yeah.
Oh,
so you can still see Mr. Bean if you're in China.
Well, Mr. Bean can only have one kind of a divorce. Messy and hilarious. Yes.
So wet. But I love Mr. Bean.
This movie's
a little better, but the show's... It doesn't hold a candle to the shows. They're just like they're so segmented in cartoons.
The movies. I actually never saw the second one, but like the first one is good when it is just Mr. Bean skits.
Yeah.
It's when it's like, oh, what are you doing with Peter Nichols's family? You're supering him as father? What? Who cares? Go back to putting your spilling vomit everywhere, or getting turkey guts on things, or sneezing on the Mona Lisa.
You know what those movies didn't have?
What?
Willem Dafoe. Dafoe.
Whoa, he's in this?
Willem Dafoe is in this film, yes. He's the second credited person. I haven't seen it in a while. Jesus, I can't believe it's 10 years since something I think is universally one of the funniest characters ever has come back in anything official and non-charity or sadness related.
Yep. For the Olympics, he did a bit for the London Olympics.
No, he's been really good with stuff like that. I don't know, that tends to be what British comics do. I'm not going to make a new office, but I'll make a special.
I'm guessing he dropped a bunch of gold medals in the toilet or something and tried to dry them off. Well, Michael Phelps is trying to get a medal.
It's more likely, and I can't think of anything as bad at improv, that he accidentally ate something that was important to the Olympics. You got to think about like somebody's nose plugs in the swimming pool.
He sneezed on the Olympic torch and put it out.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I can tell you what it was, though.
What was it?
It was the beginning of Chariots of Fire with the running on the beach. They like superimpose him into it, trying to keep up with everyone, and then he gives up and like gets in a car.
I'm going to say correct. That is correct.
Yep.
That absolutely happened. The next movie that Diana wants to talk about, because my word, I'm out of my comfort zone here.
We can talk about Nanny Diaries.
What is the Nanny Diaries, and why does it sound so geared towards me?
It's called Chris Watch Me, the movie. Because it's a movie where Black Widow and Captain America team up against supervillain Laura Linney.
Oh, I do hate Laura Linney. That's impossible to joke, people. Stop writing your letters.
No, I mean, it's a romantic, it's a super soft romantic comedy where Scarlett Johansson plays a nanny to Laura Linney, who's an uptight, like, Madison Avenue lady, fancy Fifth Avenue person, whatever. Rich, elite person, guy who's got a kid who's probably named, like, Emerson. And, and so she's, you know, and she's a nanny, and there's wackiness where she's, it's the Devil Wears Prada, but with a nanny. I mean, honestly, is what we're going
now
for.
Now I'm sold.
But it's funny that, like, the romantic interest is Chris Evans. Mm-hmm. So we got, what, 2 years before they start filtering into the MCU?
Yeah, and teasing us with a romantic relationship that never comes.
That never comes. No, they're work spouses. They're not kissy spouses.
I watch Winter Soldier too much. I can dream.
Fine. Yeah, write your fanfic. That's whatever. So yeah, just imagine. I kind of want to watch it and just imagine that they're both undercover. And yes, and Laura Linney is also a supervillain. It's really Red Skull in a mask. Oh no!
Jesus Christ! I've never in my life heard of this film. I usually read about every film, read every review. I've never heard of this film.
Well, there's this boxer. He's living on the streets.
Oh no! I ain't no bum. I'm just homeless.
What's his name?
Satterfield.
I'm sure my dad used to idolize that guy.
I never dreamed though I'd be heavyweight champ. I always thought that I would win it.
You fought a mother. You fought Patterson.
This article is my title shot.
That was an awful line.
And Josh Hartnett lost that title shot and was never heard from again.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke. Remember Josh Hartnett? That was wonderful. That was a good time.
This, resurrecting the champ. This kind of looks like it's an Oscar reel for Samuel L. Jackson.
It looks like it should have a giant Disney logo on it before they acquired everything worth watching.
We need to resurrect the champ in my heart.
Oh my God! Yeah, I've never ever heard of this.
Yeah.
I love boxing movies, and I love Sam L. Jackson. I'm kind of surprised that this also was completely off my radar too.
Yeah, man, that doesn't ring a bell
just
at all.
And went.
The next one, not so much.
Jet Li and Jason Statham are at war.
Oh, war!
You and I are gonna finish this.
Ooh!
Speaking of bad SEO,
war movie.
Yeah, war movie.
War movie. The sequel to Date Movie.
War movie. War film. War film. Jet Li.
You're gonna have to. And knowing what I know about researching stuff, just type "war 2007" if you want to find this movie. Otherwise, you're gonna have a really hard time.
Or you're gonna get a bunch of Iraq news.
Or a bunch of. Jesus Christ.
And it's
that
like
was a better joke.
Jet Li and Jason Statham were together in Expendables where they went to war.
War.
Come on.
I'm trying to pinpoint, when was the time Jet Li said he was retiring from all action movies to devote himself to nonviolent work? Because now that seems like that's such a thing of the past, because he just went right back into it. I've never heard of this. No, I've heard of War, but I kind of gave up on Jet Li films after the one. I loved a lot of his earlier work.
Hero, I definitely checked out Hero.
Was that 04?
Somewhere around there,
It was dope. We found a Hero reference in the Simpsons movie. It was one of the most fun references we could find. But no, you never seen it? I haven't seen it.
No. Reviews were sort of like, eh. Like, I want to see these guys, like, in a cool action movie fighting. This isn't as cool as we were hoping.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there's at least good parts in it.
I'm sure there's like one scene that you can watch on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm sure there's one cool Jet Li scene, so okay.
And substandard definition, god damn it. But we can move into the TV of 2007, because that'll get a little more interesting.
A lot of stuff that went viral from TV onto the internet, I'll say.
Yep.
First up is Yo Gabba Gabba, which debuted this very week, August 20th, 2007. A show that is aimed towards kids, but seems to get adult attention a lot because it's just a bunch of crazy, giant, Muppet-like creatures singing and dancing about friendship and fun stuff.
And they have so many crazy guests.
Yes. Well, this isn't so much a guest, but a child who appeared on the show who was one of the first thing. Well, when I think of Yo Gabba Gabba, this is what comes to mind. This is actually a clip from The Soup talking about Yo Gabba Gabba and one of its more notable child characters.
But my favorite part was what happened when Nathaniel drank too many juice boxes.
My name is Nathaniel. I like to dance.
You dancing?
That is...
He is getting down.
It's hypnotic. And it's not even an episode of Wonder Shows, and that's just from Yo Gabba Gabba?
Yeah, but it was like... Things went viral way less back then. So it was like the one thing everyone would talk about, whereas like on Twitter, it's like something's... There's a new thing every like 2 hours, and if you weren't there, then you missed it. But it's like... I would just go to like my cube mates, and I'd say like, hey, I'm Nathaniel. I like to dance.
Well, speaking of virality, if you were wondering... Well, this is a minor factor, not
before,
in the notes.
Before we even move, so Yo Gabba Gabba is a good watchable stoner show. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, like I said, the guest stars, like the very first time I watched any of it, they're like, okay, that was a fun song and bit. And then they're like, hi, I'm Mark Mothersbaugh. I'm here to show you how to draw a puppy.
Yeah.
Isn't that fun, kids? I'm like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah. Kids aren't appreciating this enough.
Yeah. If you were a musician or comedian and you thought going on Sesame Street was selling out, then you went to Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yeah, that's where the hit people went.
Yeah, I remember Jack Black being on it, and a lot of indie bands too.
And
yeah.
Segueing from my previous viral thing, mm-hmm. if you were wondering what happened to Homestar Runner... They were. This was, I think, the first writing job of those brothers, or one or two
one
of them.
Or two,
and that's what brought the website into hiatus, not being able to handle the. And they now work primarily in television, but this is like, I don't know. We could probably have a Homestar Runner moment coming up somewhere in the 07 segment.
I mean, like we talked in 1997, a couple months ago about this, like the first one being made. But so the late 90s and early 2000s are Homestar Runner's time, and now it made way for Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yo Gabba Gabba, oof.
Yeah. Speaking of viral, though.
Yes, I think she may have actually said Gabba Gabba in this answer, but the final edition of Miss Teen USA that aired on network television was on August 24th, 2007. Boo. Miss Teen USA 2007, the last time it aired on network television. But it went out with a bang.
They should have known to bring it back for this.
With the most memorable beauty pageant answer ever. And here's the entire thing.
Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
South Carolina?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. Or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
Mario Lopez doing an amazing job, cracking up.
I don't want to shit on this lady too much, so let me say this. That sounds like a female version of our current president.
And that also
exactly.
Yes.
And
yes,
she also is doing this live.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk for a living in a microphone.
This happens to me.
Sometimes, yes, this happens to me too.
This
such
happened
as
to me all episode.
Times,
I apologize.
Yes. Such as in times when I have had too much to drink.
But you usually can have, I don't know, 30 seconds to bring it around to some sort of thesis statement.
Ooh.
I mean, it's so rough that it has to be a question about education, and she's proving the point that our education sucks.
Did she say the South Africa?
We can help this South Africa and the Iraq.
And
she
the
says
Iraq.
The Iraq.
Again, very
times.
Presidential. Who knew? 10 years later.
But I think
that's our Secretary of Education now, right?
And they did. She did have a nice redemption moment. I think she appeared on like CNN or some other show like a week later. And she's like, here is what I meant to say before I got like tongue-tied and flummoxed. Like, yeah, we need better educational materials so that the people, kids can learn geography better, blah, blah, blah. Like yeah. that, yeah. She, that's what she meant to say, but like it, that's like three thoughts coming to the train station at the same time.
It is. Kids are bad at geography because it's just memorization with no context yeah. of what these countries are and who they do and whether you'll visit them or not.
Where yeah. South Africa and the Iraq came yeah. from? I really, South Africa of all places. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And Jesus Christ, I don't know. How do we talk about this one? Trapped in the Closet, chapters 13 and 20.
So 22? This is like the Empire Strikes Back of Trapped in the Closet.
Yeah,
I was only there for the original batch. So
were you there when I didn't? I never. I like at this point, I was. Yeah. I was kind of Dover boy towards certain viral things, such as the Miss Teen USA pageant. Like, I get it. She's dumb. I don't care.
Yeah.
Hope she's still pretty. but this, I was like, yeah, whatever. It sounds stupid. I don't want to watch it. And someone put on R. Kelly's Trapped in a Closet for me. And when I wasn't laughing out loud to the point where my chest hurt, my chin was like, just my mouth was agape the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I think
it's amazing.
I was talking to one of you two about it. The originals, like, fuck you. That was sincere. Yeah. You really thought you were doing something amazing.
Yeah.
And then this came back, and it's just like he just leaned in.
Yeah.
To what went yeah. viral about the original Trapped in the Closet.
Well, it's interesting because like he's leaning into the crazy, yeah. but he's also leaning into the sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
It's just getting more extreme on all levels.
It's clear he didn't have an ending, so.
Yeah,
and he still doesn't. I mean, can I summarize what happens?
Please.
Because there's extensive write-ups trying to explain how these people are related and
but
everything.
It starts with an affair and someone... trapped right. inside of a closet.
Yeah, chapters 1 through 12 is about R. Kelly's character. I mean, this is all sung.
It's my character.
Is cheating on his wife with this woman.
With a woman.
and he hides in the closet when her husband comes home. Her husband is a pastor, and he turns out he's been cheating on her with a man.
He's going to tell Jesus.
And there's a lot of threatening and yelling as he gets out of the closet. He loves to throw his gun around and like what's going on here?
It's a Christian thing to do.
And then it turns out like the woman he slept with is like his wife's friend. And that ends with one of the best lines ever. Was like, you remember when you called me and you said you saw your husband with some hoe at the club? Well, that hoe was me. Yeah.
I find it hard to describe because I knew what it was, but yeah. I didn't know it would be so hypnotic. And at least the first 12 episodes, I can just sit there and watch it forever. It was so funny.
Yeah. And then they end up with Michael K. Williams' cop, and the cop's wife is cheating on him with a little person named Big Man, and she's pregnant, and who's the daddy?
That's so
all
wonderful.
Chapters 1 through 12. Chapters 13 through 22 that came out 10 years ago, let me summarize. Sylvester and his brother Tuan confront Tuan's ex-girlfriend Tina, who he believes is responsible for Tuan going to jail. It turns out that at the time, Tina was pregnant by Tuan, and it was her now lover Roxanne that turned him in. Meanwhile, Pimp Lucius is confronted by Reverend Evans. Reverend Evans refuses to stop pimping. Sylvester and Tuan make a business deal with a mobster named Joey. Rosie, Pimp Lucius's estranged mother, finds out Pastor Rufus and Chuck were lovers. Chuck now has AIDS. She tells everybody. And Kathy, Sylvester, Gwendolyn, James, Bridget, Big Man, and an unidentified woman, plus Pimp Lucius, are shocked to find out they could be infected.
Why didn't you sing that?
Could be infected.
It's trapped in a studio with Diana Goodman.
Yeah, there is a...
And we have a clip.
The best section is when the Reverend, played by R. Kelly, tries to convince Pimp Lucius, played by R. Kelly, to stop pimping.
You can do it, Pimp Lucius.
Just stop pimping.
Stop pimping.
Lucius.
You can do it, Lucius.
Just cut it loose. Let it go.
You can do it, Pimp Lucius.
Spoken like someone who's never pimped a day in their life. You know how hard it is to put down? God, I could pimp right now if I had to.
And I mean, well, modern day R. Kelly, he's kind of keeping women and brainwashing them and abusing them.
That's a fucked up story, is it not?
He might be a serial abuser.
R. Kelly's a piece of shit?
Yeah, well, he's
where was
always,
the evidence?
He's always been a piece of shit. It's just, what kind of a piece of shit is he being?
In 2007, he was a kind of a piece of shit. And now he is a total piece of shit.
Time ain't nothing but a number.
Yeah.
He says, referencing the marriage to a 15-year-old.
I know. And if she didn't want to get peed on, she could have moved out the way. I understand that. He's always been a problematic figure, let's say.
I just...
Talented, but issues with women.
I never loved his music, and therefore I never understood how
Not
he got away with so much.
Not even his Space Jam song, or his Batman and Robin song?
No, I just don't like slow shit like that. I had to work in the library too long with a bunch of like 80-year-old black ladies, and I had to hear that kind of shit all day, and it fucking... I just hate... do not care for it. Really don't like it.
By the way, another postscript for the Miss South Carolina from Miss Teen USA 2007.
Uh-oh.
She, a couple years later... She did appear on The Amazing Race, so she got to go visit the South Africa and Asia.
And the Iraq.
The Iraq.
Yes.
Good for her.
But we can finally get to games, which, other than Zelda, I think one of the most notable games we've talked about in a while, and especially younger folks
this
can latch onto this
to
one.
To me, this is where the HD generation of gaming really kicked off, because... Yeah. I mean, 2005, Xbox 360 came out, and there were some couple notable games in 2006. Gears of War, but
Gears of War's a big one.
I mean, BioShock is the game that I say, like, when I first think of like a big HD first-person shooter, this is the first big one.
I think
still one of the best.
IMO, BioShock was one of the first games I played that satisfied my need to shoot things and endure and dispense violence, but wasn't embarrassing.
And also, had a great story.
Yeah.
And had something approximating moral choice in it.
It wasn't. I didn't have to hide it for a second. I showed my girlfriend like games. Like, you got to watch this opening. Like, it's astounding.
Mm. Yeah.
What a great way to tell a story. Like, just an undersea world. That's I don't know. Yeah. What would you say?
That's an Ayn Rand Wang fest.
This
is when I wish I didn't suck at games so I could play it myself. I would watch Michael play it like just for the cutscenes. And I point to this as like. This is art because it is art that there's a point where it knows it's art and it's commenting on it. The idea of you're controlling a character in a game and then you get to a point where you find out, oh, you think you've been controlling a character. We've been fucking with you. And it's the entire concept of what is a game and what is autonomy. It's like, yeah, that's art. Also, it looks beautiful, and I love steampunk stuff, so it looks amazing.
I mean, it was just like, it was redone in not HD, but it had a definitive edition a year or two ago, so it's like, it still looks great, and it's a lot because of stylistic choices. That's why it can hold up a decade later. It's not like trying to be the biggest, most envelope pushing thing. It's making interesting decisions with like design.
And here is the scene I guess Diana was referring to, where the main character who has no name, I believe.
I think it's just Jack.
I think he just says like one thing. They said it amount to great things.
Yeah.
They were right. Game starts, never says another
word. I also haven't played this game in
a great narrative device where, like, instead of forcing me to endure bad movie sequences, you could find audio logs and just keep moving and exploring as you explored weird parts of this universe and how it came apart. But you've been being told to go after Andrew Ryan, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And
it wonderfully... contextualized fetch quests.
Yeah.
Like, this game, and I think like Dead Space does it a couple years later, where it's just like,
why did you do everything you said?
Strongest person around. Why aren't you making me go to this far-flung thing and pick up this one thing when you could have like got somebody else on the intercom to do that?
You could have invented a fetch robot and said you made the strongest man in the universe, and I, for some reason, accommodated you.
Yeah, well, there's a reason.
Stop, would you guide me? Would you kindly? Powerful phrase. Familiar phrase.
Would you kindly? Would you kindly get this? Would you kindly find that? Would you kindly find that? Would you kindly find that? Would you kindly get this? Would you kindly head to Ryan's office and kill the son of a bitch?
Sit, would you kindly? Stand! Would you kindly run? Stop! Turn.
Here's a Randian line.
A man chooses. A slave obeys.
That's one Randy Cuck.
Yeah.
It's a super influential game for all the right reasons, and for some reason, two wasn't embarrassing either.
Yeah, and I mean, infinite people kind of.
I really don't like that game.
It's over. It's all right. It has a weird, a much different aesthetic. Yeah, BioShock. I also the other thing that I love about that game is the Big Daddy. It's kind of a boss character, but you can avoid them if you want for the most part. But it is one of those things where it's like it was a kind of encounter in a game where you would talk to. I mean, I worked at a game magazine, but like you, I would talk to my coworkers, like, "How did you beat him?
Yeah,
did you fight him? Did you do it?
Yeah, did you did you launch like an electrical plasmid into the water as it walked through to stun him?
Yeah,
and run around, hit him in the back with a shotgun." An enemy that was genuinely hard to kill. At that point, you'd encounter a big boss and it'd be a series of interactive cutscenes because you don't really have the agency to take down something big and heavy. But this, I thought that was really great.
This one, like, you'd
hear them from
disposal.
Like half a mile away and get scared. And, like, I'm not ready to deal with this. I don't have enough. I don't have enough juice.
Yeah.
I can't do this.
But then when you defeat one, you get to either harvest a little sister to get more power immediately, or you can save them,
monsters.
Which will save, like, spoiler, you'll get, like, better stuff at the end if you do that.
Cannot believe BioShock is 10 years old. I remember watching the first trailer with your husband a decade ago. Man, it was mind-blowing. It really was. I think it made games a little more mature, and it may have gathered an audience who thought they didn't like games at that point.
And this is, I mean, we talked about Zelda before, but I don't think that was directly trying to do this, but BioShock coming out in August of 2007 made me realize this is when the holiday season starts. And now we start to get we get the big games earlier and earlier every year.
Yeah.
And August is usually when they kick off, like, with the big shooters.
Yeah, but this is great. If you haven't played it, you can pick it up, I think, incredibly cheap anywhere. And there's a collection.
You can get it for, like, a song on Steam or Xbox 360. But there's also definitive editions that are on Xbox One and PS4.
Yeah. But thank you guys so much for listening. How about that? That wraps up most of 302010. We have a couple bits to get to. Remember, there's a quiz, so hang tight. One of the best things about this show is the comments that people leave. I know I'm a broken record about that, but it never ceases to entertain me. And because we can't read them all off here, because we are at a bandwidth bottleneck, we decided to make our own show on patreon.com/lasertime, where you can find not only a bunch of commentaries and bonus shows and video commentaries, a show where we just engage with your feedback, because again, it's usually funnier than ours because there's only so many things we did during this point, right?
Yes.
But yes, I love that. So here's a highlight. We have a whole show about this. Movie Brats had a lot to say about 87 movies. Says, "I definitely love both Living Daylights and The Lost Boys. If I was alive in 87, it would have been great theatrical double feature for me. Pity that Timothy Dalton only had two Bond movies. Never a third. He tried and he was great. I find him underrated.
Yep.
I prefer Living Daylights over License to Kill, since License to Kill tried so hard. I don't think it worked in its favor to be as dark as they wanted it to be."
I agree.
But the Living Daylights, I feel, had a good romance element given the choice of Bond girl, and there was a solid chemistry that it worked. Oh, and trust me, riding on a cello case is not the silliest thing in the film. In a deleted scene when Bond was trying to evade a bunch of flunkies in another action set piece, I think in Turkey, he was riding on a carpet, but the scene was cut because it looked too goofy, like he was literally on a flying magic carpet. Living Daylights, I love it. Same with Lost Boys. I love it. I love it as a great vampire movie with stylish direction, an awesome soundtrack, fun scary sequences, and I like its sense of humor. The cast is solid too. I do know that the Lost Girl sequel concept has been resurrected on a comic book by Tim Healy of Hack and Slash Frame. It's great, and I know a reboot TV show from the CW is in the works by Rob Thomas, guaranteed to be smooth, who is showrunner of iZombie and created Veronica Mars. I know who Rob Thomas is. Much more of that. Every 2 weeks, we drop a bonus show for you. We might be missing one here and there, given some scheduling conflicts, but you got a bunch over there. They are really, really fun. New sound clips, new anecdotes, mostly from you guys, and we can't thank you enough for that. And thank everybody for their support of us, the Lasertime group, at patreon.com/lasertime. You can find out more at lasertimepodcast.com. We have another show that's kind of like this, Lasertime, but topic-based. Diana has inspired, helped organize, and been on a bunch of our best episodes.
Oh, thank you.
I was walking into something the other day, and my girlfriend's like, "Oh, I think I used to play that song in choir or on the cello," and I'm like, "That's Hungarian Rhapsody. I learned that from Diana's classic cartoon songs explained, trying to figure out songs you could probably hum by heart but don't know the name of." Really fun show there. That was a while back, but you can find out more at lasertimepodcast.com. Bunch of other shows, Talking Simpsons, Video Game Apocalypse, hosted by Diana's better half, Michael Raparez.
Yep.
And our Patreon has a weekly show with special guests on it that's just for the people who support us, as well as movie commentaries, Quiplash streams, where we play this awesome fun party game with anybody who has a phone. Doesn't cost you anything. Yes, I'm done plugging. I'm out of words. And Diana, where can people find you?
I'm also on Twitter talking classic movies at Le Cine Nerd.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you've been doing Talking Critic for the Talking
and
Simpsons Patreon.
And I'm talking critic. There's like a show that was made for me. All movie jokes all the time.
And you
so,
can find
yep,
it at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
Yep, support
with
talking
our buddies
Simpsons.
Bob Mackie and Henry Gilbert,
you
who you probably know.
One thing to plug. Hmm. YouTube.com/LaserTime.
Yes.
We've got a ton of streams that we've done, and one that we did with Brett Elston, huge mm-hmm. Legend of Zelda fan.
Yeah.
We went through the entirety of Legend of Zelda. He played through it, so
wow.
We went through all 8 dungeons and
cool.
killed Ganon.
Yeah.
But yeah, Brett's also done, like, he explained all the references in Breath of the Wild to previous Zelda games.
Yeah,
the
map has the most casual references to the entirety of the Zelda series, and it was fascinating to go through that with a fan like Brett.
Yes.
YouTube.com/LaserTime. We tend to stream games, occasionally really bad ones based on movie properties we bring up here.
Yes.
So join us over there. It's been really fun. I collected a bunch of shit of... game characters farting. We have Tom Servo hosting a game stream.
Yes.
I swear, I don't know how it happened. And some Planet of the Apes stuff. But Diana, we got to get into the deaths and birthdays.
Deaths this week, the only one I could find, 1987, Bayard Rustin passed away. He was 77. He was a civil rights activist who was also out and proud.
Really?
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He was a tough guy. It's not easy to be out and proud in the 50s, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was...
That's a
cool
name.
Dude.
That's also a name that sounds like he's always ready for a fight.
Yeah,
I'm Bayard Rustin.
Yeah.
All right, you know what that
Bayard
means.
Bayard the Fist Rustin.
I lost in a sweep last week.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can make up for it because it's time for the
birthday
quiz.
Okay, again, one man and one woman. I'm going to give you their birthday factoid, and then I'm going to start listing, going through their filmography as fast as I can.
Let's do it.
Woo! Okay, let's start with born August 20th, 1974. 2 Golden Globes, 5 Oscar nominations. Her films include Drop Dead Gorgeous, Psycho Beach Party, Cruel Intentions 2, Catch Me If You Can, June Bug, Talladega Nights, Underdog, Enchanted.
Isla Fisher? Yep.
Charlie Wilson's War.
Oh,
Doubt.
Amy Adams?
Amy Adams.
Yeah, I'm back, baby! Fucking get off that high horse, dude.
I always mix those two up.
It's the one who looks like Isla Fisher.
The kid who comes back. Will it be another sweep for Antista?
All right.
See how well I know my boys.
Okay. Born August 18th, 1952. We have already talked about him in this episode. His first gig was a dancer on Disney-owned Parade. His roles include...
Patrick Swayze.
Nice.
Damn.
Nice job.
I was going to say Jerry Orbach, but I remembered I never brought him up in Dirty Dancing.
Oh,
R.I.P.
man. I didn't get to talk about...
Skatetown USA.
Skatetown USA, Outsiders, and a very memorable SNL.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's a really good one.
The Chippendale Dancer.
Yeah.
All right, people. That has been 302010. Maybe tell a friend. Like the Laser Time Show page on Facebook. You'll know when new episodes goes up. If you like supporting us, patreon.com/lasertime. And we really do appreciate it. It's helped us do this for over 2 years, full time for a living, to make multiple shows like this and others. Thank you so much. We are going to close out with Silver Lining by Rilo Kiley.
Yeah. One of these, my favorite song from that album that we mentioned before.
Cool.
See you next week.
Going back into red.